Welcome to Portland Speaks, a podcast featuring interesting conversations with interesting Mainers, hosted by Tanner Campbell and recorded weekly at the Portland Pod in South Portland, Maine. Thanks for tuning in. Let's begin. Brent Dattelaris.
Hola.
Hello, how are you?
I'm well, man. How are you?
Can you come closer to the mic?
Yep.
Well, actually, just however you're comfortable, and then situate this.
How about that?
Perfect. That is Brent Dattelaris. He's a lifelong Mainer and pastry chef, and in December, he's opening a dessert-only restaurant and bar called Gross Confection Bar.
I've always been a wise ass. It started off with me posting stuff on the internet, pictures and stuff on Facebook and Instagram, with just a description of the dessert and gross after it. And people started saying, like, what are you talking about? That sounds fucking amazing. What do you mean gross? And I just never explained it. But yeah, so gross kind of stemmed from that. And I had a couple other names for it that just didn't fly with people. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They were like, I don't get it. And I was like, all right. And then Eric, my partner, said, why don't you just name it gross? And I thought to myself, like, that is like the scariest thing to me, because it's like, it could be awesome or it could be terrible. We went with the awesome part.
Before we talk about Gross, a brand new part of Brant's life, I think it's best we get a feel for who Brant is and how he got there. And I think the best way to do that is to talk about his first memory of good food and...
Lulu Dattelaris. She was my stepfather's mom, came over from Greece. I remember fondly my grandparents arguing in Haverhill, Massachusetts, in Greek. And had no fucking clue what they were saying. And she used to cook all the time. She would make donuts and kifteres and tiganites. And, she would do this sausage stuffed squash blossoms that she would get right out of her backyard. I have a memory in my head of exactly where and what the strawberry plant looked like in her backyard with berries on it. It's ingrained in my head. Like, what was behind it and, like... I was a tiny, tiny kid. It was probably my first, you know, interaction with just a farm, you know, her backyard little garden. Mm-hmm. But she grew some cool stuff out back there, so. But she was loud. She was like the matriarch, without a doubt. She ran the roost in the family.
Brant's family moved around a lot. He was born in Connecticut, but...
Yeah, we lived in Plasto, New Hampshire... Lawrence kid, and then Haverhill. Then we moved to Boothbay when I was pretty young. So Boothbay was tough. Younger years weren't awesome. Parents weren't the best parents they could be, but you know, shit happens. Everybody goes through shit. So
weeks before, we'd had a conversation about the lack of awesomeness present in Brant's childhood: physical abuse, alcoholism, a brief stint as a ward of the state while his brothers and the Maine legal system put pressure on his parents to be better. But part of that conversation was about how he doesn't really like looking back at his past and how he prefers to look at the road ahead of him instead. So I didn't feel it appropriate to press him for specifics. He'd been through an unawesome childhood, and I think we're all empathic and intelligent enough to infer the rest. I was, however, interested in how he coped during his childhood.
And my escape was to just, you know, put my headphones on and take the boat out to Squirrel Island, which is about a mile off of Boothbay. And it's just a small little island. I don't even think people live there year round, maybe a few, but it's not really that big at all. But it was my escape as a kid. And I would just go put headphones on and sing on the rocks, because it's like it's like a classic Maine little island. Barely anybody on there, but beautiful coastline. And I would just go and sing, and I would harmonize with stuff, and that's how I learned how to sing.
And that time, by virtue of its regular necessity, strongly nurtured the performer side of Brant, and in the best of ways. He found an effective outlet in metal music, and honestly, he's really good.
Thank you.
But music wasn't a passion for Brandt so much as it was and is an outlet for emotional tension. His passion has always been food.
I was in high school in Brunswick, 15, and I happened upon Sam Hayward. He owned a restaurant called 22 Lincoln in Brunswick. And I was pretty much way beyond like cool dining. It was spot on. He just really cared about where his food was coming from. And me, I was just a dishwasher. So I was just like, and then I started getting inquisitive of like, okay, what, this is pretty awesome. You know, cause you taste the pan sauce that Sam Hayward makes and it's like changes your fucking scope on how to cook. But, he introduced me to his gardener, Frank Gross, who still, probably to this day, one of the most influential characters in my culinary knowledge of like just the way his farming skills and his product still today, I think he only sells to two places, 4th Street and the Harris Eakin Inn, I believe. I got the opportunity to go to his house once, and one thing that went to his garden, the one thing that I was blown away by is when you walk in into the on the dirt that all of his vegetables grow on, you sink into it. It's so well aerated and so taken care of that his vegetables and all of his produce shine because of the way he treats it. The way he treats it like it's a child. It's his produce is unlike anything I've ever met or eaten in California or here. I mean, it's crazy. But back in high school, Sam introduced me to Frank. He was like, come here, check this out. And he brought me to his van. I'm like, sketchy. He's got these coolers and he's showing me radicchio. He's showing me curly endive. He's showing me just like, I can't even remember. It's like so many cool things. And still to this day, he makes the best tarragon pickles out of gherkins anybody has ever tasted in their life.
Ever.
Ever.
So what is the reason that Sam takes it upon himself to take you here? Like, does he see something in you?
Because I guess
you're the dishwasher, right?
Yeah, but I do remember still to this day. This is like 30 years ago, we've or more now. Jesus. Wow.
Sorry. But I remember need a minute?
Yeah.
A moment of silence. Yeah.
So why am I holding in a restaurant? He had his own homemade ice creams on the menu. I remember it was vanilla, there was a caramel, and there was chocolate. And he plated them in a very simple way, three scoops, and he wanted me to do it.
Huh.
And so I tried it, and he showed me how to scoop correctly with like a scooper, not like a canal or anything like that, but you know, just a regular scoop, and taught me how to actually scoop it well. So it was like beautiful on the plate, just scoops. And I still remember that shit. But you know, I worked with him for a little while, and then life happens, you know. You drive to California.
You drive to California, indeed. While Sam Hayward encouraged Brandt to go to culinary school, Brandt's emphatic urge to escape his hometown and see the world, something I think all of us who have ever been young can understand intimately, won out. Culinary school would have to wait.
Literally the day after high school, my friend Beth and I took her truck and drove across the country in 4 days. And she went to Santa Cruz, and I was like, I'm going to go visit my buddy in San Francisco. And so I basically found some woods in Larkspur, California, in Marin, where my buddy lived, down the street from his house. I couldn't live with him because he lived with his folks at the time. I was like, fuck it, I'll just live in my tent. And so kind of like in Larkspur, overlooking Mount Tamalpais, and I just I bounced around. I couldn't even tell you the names of the places that I worked in San Francisco. They don't even exist anymore, I'm sure. That was 1990. So, and then after that, I just bounced around. I was so lucky I'm alive right now. I did so many drugs. And like, I remember taking my next thing was to go to LA because my mom has
a
second aunt who is blah, blah, blah. Yeah. And I'm like, I'm just going to go live with them. There was a bus line, I think it's still in existence, the Green Tortoise, maybe. But anyway, it's like a big school bus, right? And you get on it and you pay, and it's like $12 to go from Santa Cruz to Los Angeles. It's like nothing. And it's like a school bus kind of thing. Back then it was. I don't know what it is now. But and then midway through, they kick everybody off, right? And they go in, they do what they call the miracle or something like that. And then you get back on the bus and everything is beds. But they kick everybody off so you can't see how they did it.
Right.
So I thought it was pretty cool.
That is cool.
And then the bus broke down. And we broke down in front of a liquor store.
Mm. Which yeah. is really just
you can invite. Just imagine what happened after
just
that.
Just an invitation, right?
Yeah. 4 hours or something right. before the bus got right. fixed.
This was it was a mess.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah.
And then I lived in LA for just a hot minute. And then they were like, all right, cool. You can't stay with us. You fucking vagrant. Go, what do you want to do? And I was like, I really want to cook. And so they were like, well, we'll pay your way back to Portland, Maine.
So with California having run its course, it was time to go home.
I was broke, so they gave me $200 mm-hmm. and they gave me a bus ticket back to Portland, Maine. So the Greyhound from right. Los Angeles to Portland, Maine. Probably some of the worst days of my life. It was pretty fucking awful.
The experience of the trip was awful?
No, it was during a strike for Greyhound. Mm. And so there were protests at most of the stops that we would have from workers and shit. We were in a traffic jam in somewhere, I forget, middle of nowhere, but it was in a city and the bus driver just fucking walked a bus full of people in a traffic jam. He got off and quit.
Was there anything that set him off? He was just tired driving the bus.
Done. Traffic like, jam. I don't get paid enough for this shit.
Right. Okay.
Everybody else is on strike. I'm out.
Oh.
And so luckily there was literally a truck driver. It's like a Seinfeld episode. A truck driver just was like a passenger and was like, I know how to drive the bus. So he, he drove us to the next bus station. Then there was a stop, I want to say Syracuse, New York, where protesters came with bats to the windows while we were in the bus, like smashing windows. And yeah. But yeah. And then I got to Boston, right? 4 days later, I finally get to Boston. And it's just like, it's terrible. You're gross, not in a good way. And you stink. And then they tell you that there's no bus going to Portland.
And you're stuck in Boston.
I'm stuck at Boston. It's like midnight.
No friends?
I call my brother.
Okay, he lives there.
Dude, you have to come and get me. And so he did. And then I moved to Portland.
Finally back home, Brant was ready to start pursuing his passion in earnest. He set his sights on culinary school.
Had to figure out, how am I going to get into culinary school? I'm broke. My family doesn't have any money.
Mm.
How am I going to pay for this? Student loans.
I thought you were going to say, I started hooking.
I am a gigolo. No, so then, I took a year off and fucked around a lot. Ate a lot of acid. And
as one does.
Yeah. And then went to culinary school in 1991.
Hmm.
That kind of smacked me in the mouth.
How so? Like how much you didn't know? Kind of like
yeah. Yeah. That and also the seriousness in which the chefs took everything.
Hmm.
Like I wasn't used to that. I wasn't, I hadn't really worked in the business long enough to be like, you need to get your shit together, kid.
What do you mean? As a fine young man who traveled to California, did a bunch of everything. Drugs, partying on tortoise buses and dropped acid for a couple of years. You did not take things seriously?
No, I didn't.
It's unbelievable.
All my friends would agree with me on that. you go to culinary school and it's an eye opener.
Yeah.
I was 20 at the time, and my 21st birthday was probably one of the worst ones I ever had because I was broke.
Right.
I was in school and I had exams the next day, so I studied. Hmm. Nobody remembered it was my birthday because everybody else was studying.
It's sad because it's your 21st. Right? That's the only reason it's sad. Now you would pray that people would forget it was your birthday.
Yeah, totally. But it whipped me into shape, made me realize the importance of food and why we eat and what's important to me.
Huh.
So, and it's a career that I realized like, dude, I will never fucking starve. I can always cook.
Hmm.
That's the way you got to look at it sometimes when you Poe.
When I was Poe, I ate a lot of ramen noodle and
I did too.
A lot of chip sandwiches. Are you a fan of the chip sandwich?
I've done
Ruffles
the mayonnaise.
And some Wonder Bread.
Mayonnaise sandwich.
Oh, mayonnaise and tomato.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so a nourishing. Standby. That's a New England standby. It a little is. Pepper if you're lucky.
Just the packets from.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I asked if any of his instructors were particularly influential and what the classes were like.
Chef Andre was great. Yeah, I mean, there were a few. Chef Michel LeBourne, he was kind of a little crazy, but still just fucking classic French, you know what I mean? Chef Andre, though, he taught me how to break a mayonnaise and fix it. I thought my fucking mind was going to be blown because he purposely broke it. I'm like, why are you doing this? Like,
why do you hate me?
You just told me everything is so expensive. Why are you doing this to an egg? You know, but it was good. It was an eye opener in a lot of ways about how food affects us, the history of it, all of it. I mean, still so much to learn.
After college, Brandt began his career in the restaurant industry. But even though he loved what he was doing, and even though he had singing as an outlet, he wasn't happy, and he lacked direction and purpose, which didn't make things any easier. Alcohol quickly became a coping mechanism, and it presented yet another challenge Brandt would have to rise to meet if he wanted to get to wherever it was he was going in his life.
I knew it was a problem long before I did anything about it. I mean, I think a lot of people knew it was a problem. I think myself admitting that I'm an alcoholic was probably one of the hardest things to do, but I knew it. I knew I was, you know, back in probably my 30s. I knew that, like, it was so constantly on my brain all the time about getting the fix that I needed to get, you know, to feel normal again. And normal not being like fucking outrageously hammered or whatever, but level, like even keel. So I think my tolerance had gotten to a point all throughout, you know, my 20s and 30s and into my 40s that, you know, I could drink a lot, fucking drill it.
Send it, kid.
Yeah. So, you know, I got two OUIs and went to jail for a little piece, not too long, but long enough to still not make me realize that drinking wasn't a good idea for me. So, but I quit drinking about close to 5 years ago because I took a fall. I came out of a bar here in Portland. I took a fall in the middle of the street and I kind of ripped my ear off a little bit, landed right on my face. The next day I actually went into work and my boss, he was like, are you all right? And I just kind of showed him my face and he's like, all right, you're going home. And so I left, I went home, and I think I texted my partner and told him what was up. And the next morning, I kind of slept off that day. And the next morning, he and my ex-partner showed up at my house and said, you know, you know you have a choice in what you do with your life. But if you choose to do this drinking thing, we don't want to be a part of it anymore. So. Mm.
Have they ever conveyed to you that that conversation was difficult for them to have?
Oh, fuck yeah.
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 Because they meant it, I assume.
Well, yeah, they meant it, and they had said it to me before in separate occasions, multiple times.
Why was this time different? Because of the fall, you think, maybe?
Yeah, because they knew that, they knew that I was pretty bad off.
Right.
And that I couldn't just keep going like this or I was going to fucking die, honestly. I was pretty down there, so. And then I quit cold turkey. I went to AA for a while and so I don't drink anymore.
And so he sobered up, got clean, hasn't had a drink in nearly 5 years, and decided he was going to do something he'd always wanted to do, open a dessert-only restaurant.
And then one of the things before I quit drinking I wanted to do was start this, like I would talk about it all the time, like I want to open a fucking dessert restaurant. It's such a cool city to do it in. People kind of would be totally into it. And I just didn't have, and then I would go out and get hammered and I wouldn't do it. And then I would complain about it when I was hammered, like, oh my God, we should, you know, I want to do this fucking blah, blah, blah. And I just never did anything about it. And then I got sober and put together a business plan. Trying to find the environment that I wanted to do for Gross, I had to, most of the places that we looked at were kind of, you know, proper Portland places that are kind of long hallway style places to lease or rent or whatever. And so I had the option of doing like a kitchen in the back. On the right's going to be the bar and on the left is going to be seating. You know, it's just kind of the way the building is most of the buildings are in this city, a lot of them anyway. And so when I found the place that we're going to be in now, it's kind of broken up. It's in, you know, it's a building built in 1883. It's a John Calvin Stevens building. And it was originally a bank. So there's a vault inside of the restaurant, as well as what appears to be at one point, like a cashier's window, which is in my kitchen. It's really cool. It's like it was hidden behind a bunch of walls. So for 40 years before I got the space, it was a Christmas ornament store. And so a lot of it, so the whole building is brick, and a lot of it was just, most of it was covered up with built-in shelving units for Christmas ornaments and stuff mm-hmm. like that for many, many years. And it was a rug floor, and it's pretty nasty. So we went in and took out over a ton and a half of debris, including all the drop ceiling and flooring and some walls and a whole ton of shit. It's kind of tough to see what it needed to be. Yeah. But there were beautiful archways, and it was beautiful brick, and it's below ground level, but you can still see outside. So it's got a really nice, inviting feeling to it. So the goal for me was to, I love shit that's old, you know? Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to get rid of all the built-in stuff that was in there, and the drop ceiling and the 1980 fucking whatever it was in that place, and kind of gut it and then see what we had to work with. And, it's awesome. It's a great space. It's super, super comfortable. So we broke the seating up into a couple different rooms that kind of go in like a, kind of like a semicircle pattern. It's pretty neat, but I unearthed these two, cast iron pillars. They're all built in behind these walls. And so we took the walls down and unearthed these two, cast iron pillars that are original from 1883 and structural. So they're kind of right as you walk in the front door of the restaurant. So we were like, fuck, we got to do something with these. So the host stand is right in the middle of them. So yeah, you walk right up to it. It's pretty cool. We were like, we got to utilize. The architect and I were like, this would be great for something. We got to do something with these. So that was kind of a neat find in there. I'm still waiting for the big block of gold that we'll find, in the walls or something. But nothing has popped up yet. I mean, it was a bank. Come on, give me something, dude.
Well, yeah, it's got that vault in there that I was afraid to go in.
Yeah, he wouldn't go in, you guys. He wouldn't walk in.
I'm too big a guy to walk in a space that small.
So, yeah, the vault we turned into the server station. So the vault is kind of in the middle of the building. And, we're putting the point-of-sale system in there, and it's going to have all the lighting, and it's a pretty cool little station in there. But it's like a tall ceiling, 100% brick ceiling, too. There's different vibes in it, different small little nooks here and there to sit in, or large parties. We got room for that. But overall, we ripped out the drop ceiling, and underneath it is just all original wood and, I-beams of the time period. I cleaned it, get all the dirt and everything else that was on it and left it in its raw state. So you'll see some pegs that are nailed together, and some really cool stuff in there. And it's not polished or sanded or anything. It's just this really raw material that I love about the ceiling.
In addition to the space itself, which is beautiful, and the desserts, which are delicious, Brandt is particularly focused on creating a good working environment for his team. Spending so much of his adult life in kitchens, he's known all too well how angry and hostile the kitchen can be.
I don't think it's necessary. I think it's an old school method of teaching people to make you feel really stupid because you...
To break you down.
To break you down. And, to do that. And I can see how it works. I mean, that happened in culinary school, and it happened at another job that I was at for a couple of years. And it's demeaning. I think it's degrading. I think for me, the reason why it was those two things is because of, the way it made the other party feel about themselves. I've conquered this person, and they have to do what I say because I am right. And whatever their reasoning for treating people like that, I just don't find it necessary. I feel that you can easily kind of get what you need to get done and get your point across in a more educational way, and getting people involved in it instead of being like, why the fuck did you do it that way?
Idiot.
I mean, sure. Yeah. Trust me, that's going to happen in this business, but it's not going to get to a point where there's yelling. I had enough. I've had enough of it in my life. I just don't want to be around that environment anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think people really strive when the tension is so high.
You can feel it.
Anybody around you can feel it. It's terrible. It's a terrible feeling. I think that with any business, that's a terrible feeling. But to treat people like that, I don't find the need for it.
Brandt and I spoke for a while longer before I decided it was time to wrap up and put two final questions to him. The first was easy. What's your opening menu going to look like?
The menu is kind of, it's done in like four tiers, okay, shall we say. So if you say you come from another restaurant and you're kind of like really stuffed, but you just want something a little sweet and a nice little cocktail.
Sure.
We have what is called the taste, and there'll be a selection of desserts on there that are kind of like two or three bites.
So it's like a flight of desserts.
Yeah, but it's not all on one plate. Mm. You can get a couple, you know, tasting if you want. But there's, you know, so there's, you know, four or five of those. And then there's a section called for one, which is dessert for one person. Mm-hmm. And then there's the companion, which is a dessert for two people, but it's not just two desserts on a plate. It's a dessert that's plated for two people. And then what we have last is the entourage, which is for parties of like 5 to 10, you know, larger parties. And there, those desserts are set for set on a 3 foot long or two if we need that many. Oak plates that I actually made with a friend of mine this past summer. So it'll be one huge dessert that everybody will kind of eat off of. Large format, shall we say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My final question was what I thought was the most important, for me anyway. I asked if he was happy.
I'm very happy. Yeah. I'm very happy.
Excited
yeah.
for the future?
I am. I'm a little nervous, but I think that comes with the territory of sometimes I'll be at home and I'm like, holy fuck, I'm going to be open in like a month and 10 days, supposedly.
The hopening.
Yeah, the hopening. Yeah. So, you know, it gets a little overwhelming at sometimes. And then I wake up the next day and I'm like, all right, cool. We got to get this done. We got to get that done, you know. Yeah, I'm really happy. I'm happy where it is. I'm happy with the way I'm turning out as a person myself, you know what I mean?
That's a big one.
I'm not fucking I look back at a lot of the times when I, you know, when I knew I should have quit drinking and I didn't. I was really selfish, you know what I mean? I was very selfish. And I try not to be that way, you know? Because we're all in this together, you know? And I think for me, you know, being so boozed up a lot, I just lost that sight of that, you know? Yeah. So I'm really happy, yeah.
Gross Confection Bar is located at the corner of Middle and Exchange in downtown Portland, Maine, and will be opening its doors in mid-December. Check the description of this episode for links to all Brant's relevant social profiles, as well as to other information you may find useful. If you'd like to hear the full and uncut version of Brant's interview, which is over an hour long and has plenty of great stuff in it, consider supporting this program on Patreon at patreon.com/PortlandSpeaks. For just $5 a month, you get access to all the uncut and unedited versions of our interviews, and at 4 episodes a month, that works out to $1.25 apiece, less than a cup of gas station coffee and at least 10 times as rewarding. Your support keeps this program ad-free and prevents us from needing to take on sponsors, so support if you can. It's definitely worth it. I'd like to thank you for joining me for this first episode of the Portland Speaks podcast, and I hope you'll join me next week for a discussion with Nancy Dorans, owner of the Adventure Marketplace and a well-traveled lover of culture with all sorts of great stories. Until then, friends and fellow Mainers, take care.